on, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Down to the Wire. And Mason, we missed it last week. I don't know if you realized it, but last week was our 50th show.
Oh.
And we didn't even do anything special for it. So, you know, show us how much that we really pay attention to this stuff. But so 50 shows down, how we feeling 50 shows in?
I remember how shaky we were at the very beginning, so I definitely felt like we've gotten a little bit better.
It was definitely rough at the beginning. Used to be a three-way on the podcast. Yeah. Had Courtney with us, and then you left us, and then there was, you know, some long breaks in between.
We've got it locked in now, though.
Yeah, we're locked in now. Especially during college football season. So thank you everybody who has listened in any episode in our now 51 podcast episodes. We're over halfway to 100, Mason. Maybe we'll do something special if we remember that, you know. Yeah, we're at 100.
Yeah, we'll try and remember 100. If we forget 100, we might need to start rethinking things at that point.
All right, so week 3 of college football in the books, Mason. How are we feeling about that? How are we feeling about week 3 in the books?
Cam, this was almost the saddest weekend of my life. I had to suffer through Alabama protesting their quarterback situation, apparently. And Travis Hunter gets hurt in the cheapest shot I've seen in a very long time. So that was almost bad. And then to top it off, Iowa scores 41 points. I mean, it almost could have been really bad for me.
It was like the end of the world for college football for Mason in week 3. Yeah.
Can we go back to week 1 when I was so happy and bright-eyed and bushy-tailed? That was great. I really miss it. I miss week 1.
Oh, Mason is already regretting the college football season starting, and we're not even a full month into the season, guys. You hate to see it. So, I'll say this. Week 3, everybody leading up to it was like, it's a week. Let's just wait until next week. Let's wait until week 4 comes. And there were some sneaky good games and even games that were surprising that happened last week. So if you weren't paying attention, you probably missed a good bit. I know I missed a good bit. I wasn't in front of a TV the whole time. I watched a lot of the Colorado game, watched the Florida Tennessee game. So we're going to get into all of that. But let's go ahead and start early morning. First game right after game day, LSU dismantles Mississippi Ooh. State. What did you think about that, Mason?
So going into that game, I thought LSU would win, but I thought it was going to be a really close game just because of all of the returning depth that Mississippi State has and it being in Starkville. So I thought it was going to be a tough game for LSU, but man, they looked awesome. Just being honest, they looked great. And I was a little concerned about Will Rogers. He just didn't look like he had the same juice that he has been. I know it's a completely different system, but his arm strength just looked bad. He was making bad decisions. It was a tough game on his end, but shouts to LSU, man. Malik Nabers went crazy. I was not expecting that type of performance out of him, but, man, it was a good game for them for sure.
If it was a close game in the fourth quarter, he would have broken the single game record that Kayshon got against Ole Miss a few years back. Like, he was that dominant, dude. It was insane. Insane. I predicted LSU to cover the point spread, which was, I think, 9.5 is what it was at. And I don't know if I fully expected a complete destruction of State. I mean, when we've played Mississippi State the past 5 or so years, maybe a little bit longer, it's been pretty competitive. You know, it hasn't been huge blowouts. It's been a long time since we have blown out State like we just did. I mean, Mississippi State is known as the doormat, really, of the SEC West. I don't know if I'd say doormat, but they are definitely like lower tier, like low man on the totem pole in the West. But the past 15 years or so, they haven't been that. They've been really consistent. They've been good. They've been able to win 8 games and 9 games here and there. And then they had the year with Dak where they got up all the way up to number one before losing to Bama and, you know, have been a tough out. They haven't been Vanderbilt like they had been for a long time. And so seeing this is just, wow.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about them. They always, it seems every year, they always have a couple stinkers, and then they always have a couple games where they beat somebody that they're not supposed to. So I don't think saying that they're the doormat of the SEC West is completely wrong, but I think that just shows you how competitive the West actually is and has always been, just because they always have the chance to beat somebody they're not supposed to, but then they're always going to lose to somebody who, again, they're not supposed to.
Yeah, and I'm going to say, man, Zach Arnett, with the decision that he made completely changing how their offense runs, has done them no favors whatsoever. None. I mean, you go from being the Mike Leach, throw it 60 times a game, maybe run it 10 times, to no, we're going to focus on running the ball. And what is one of Mississippi State's weaknesses? Offensive line. And it's just magnified when you run a scheme like you're running. And like, I have heard some people talk about Will Rogers as a pro prospect, and I never really, like, I think he's a really solid quarterback. He's a solid quarterback in the air raid for sure. I never really thought of him as a big NFL draft prospect. And like, it just shows why, like, it's just not the way that he can play. He can't really move around great. Like, he's really good at the timing throws and everything. Like, him and Mike Leach, perfect. Him and this, at least so far, like, it looks bad. He doesn't look like a 4-year starter in the SEC.
Yeah, for sure. So are you back in on the Tigers?
We back, baby. National championship, here we come. That's what we need to see. The offense dominated the whole time. We had a great running game with Logan Diggs, and the receivers just popped off. They dominated when they needed to dominate, and Jaden Daniels did his thing. The thing that I was interested in, really, like, I thought the offense would score. The thing that I don't know if I was fully worried about, but what I was curious to see was how the defense stacked up, because they struggled the second half against Florida State. They struggled in the first quarter against Grambling with run fits. And so since Mississippi State was going to run the ball, I was really curious to see how that was going to go. We had Greg Brooks out for a medical emergency. Omar Spates was out, which is another starting linebacker. So I was really interested to see how they would play, and the defense played really well. Harold Perkins finally making some plays. It was really nice to see. It was a really good performance. So I was really happy with it, and it makes me a little bit more comfortable moving forward. Mason Smith is really getting his feet going. He's not completely disrupting every single play, but you can tell he's gaining confidence in the knee. You're seeing the explosiveness. And I mean, I saw what I wanted to see. And so we dominated. We get Arkansas next. And if we dominate that one, top 10, top 5 coming up soon.
Well, I think this, like, going into the season, this is what everybody expected to see out of LSU. They have a really exciting defense, and then they have a lot of skill position players that can make big plays on the other end. And obviously that didn't happen week one, so I think everybody was a little salty at that. But I think coming out of week three, honestly, LSU's got to be the favorite to come out of the SEC. And honestly, I really don't think it's close, because of how Georgia performed against their first actual decent opponent. And obviously, Alabama is what they are right now, too. So
that's a great segue, Mason. Let's go ahead and go to Georgia, South Carolina. I did get to watch the second half of that one more so than the first half. So I didn't get to watch the whole thing. So go ahead and give me your thoughts on the Georgia, South Carolina game.
This is actually 27.5-point
spread. 27.5-point spread. Just for everybody just to realize again, the spread in this game was 27.5, 4 touchdowns.
This is actually perfect, Cam, because I only watched the first half and didn't get any of this stuff. coming out of the first half, dude, Georgia just looked terrible on offense, man. Carson Beck was really struggling. And the thing about Georgia is they weirdly don't use Brock Bowers enough. I know you look at the numbers. His numbers are always really nice and blah, blah, blah. But for some reason, they don't target hog him like I feel like they should. they try and have him blocking a lot more and blah, blah, blah. It's whatever. But when you got a stallion like that, you got to use him, man. And you just got to force feed him the ball. And I really don't feel like they do that enough. And when you have somebody like Carson Beck, who's still trying to get his feet wet in the SEC, it's not the best thing to come out and just lay an egg like they did in the first half. But on top of that, you got to give props to Spencer Rattler in the first half. I know he struggled in the second half. In the first half, man, he was on a dart the entire time. Like, the ball was just flying through the air. I think he was 15 of 18 to end the first half or something like that. He looked awesome, man. He was running the ball well. He was doing everything for them. And they jumped out to an early lead. And after watching the first half, I felt like they were going to continue to dominate like they were. But yeah, it's just, this Georgia team's weird, man. I feel like they lost a lot of players, and they don't have a lot of explosive guys on the outside right now, wide receiver. And like I said, if that's the case, you've got to start force feeding Brock Bowers, which I didn't feel like they necessarily did in the first half.
Yeah. So yeah, that is perfect. You didn't watch second half. So let's go ahead and get a second half perspective, because it probably does feel like probably a game of two halves, obviously. So yeah, with that, when it came to the second half, Georgia really made it an effort to run the ball. Here's what their offensive game plan was in the second half, Mason. We're going to throw bubble screens. We're going to throw to the outside, make the defense run, and then gash them up the middle. Maybe a sweep here and there. Maybe a deep play action pass. You know, we'll get Brock Bowers the ball in the flat. Like that, do speed sweeps. Like that was it. It was very horizontal. Not very much vertical, and we're just going to ground and pound. And Spencer Rattler might have been pretty hot in the first half. The second half, his wide receivers had some drops and crucial downs. The rain started really pouring down, and they, you know, whenever that happens, you're not having great grips on the ball, you're having drops. And so when you can't run the ball, you're having issues. And so it basically was just an attrition thing to where South Carolina would have mistakes to where their offense couldn't stay on the field for more than three or four plays. And then Georgia just had 10, 15 play drives where they just run the ball and the defense got gassed out. I mean, what was the weakness on the South Carolina defense? Defensive line, run defense, right? And that's what Georgia really exposed. And one of the things that you hear from a lot of the national commentators and even from the guys calling the game is like, oh, Georgia finally found themselves. This could be the springboard of the season. It's like, okay, hold on. Like, I get it. Georgia didn't play well in the first half. They came out and dominated and won by two touchdowns in the second half. But let's not be fooled here, okay? I thought South Carolina would be better this year than what they are, okay? So definitely wrong about that. But you can't tell me that the performance that Georgia had against South Carolina compared to the expectation that we had, again, expectation, four touchdowns, not a close game, and you're going to come out of that game of, oh, Georgia found themselves, they know what they are now. It's like, no, no, no. Like, you didn't play great. You ran the ball on a bad run defense, and you basically just did bubble screens and slants and curls the whole way down the field. So you just, like, good for you that you executed, but like, it was still a sloppy, wet field. So, I mean, when you're playing a team that is only going to throw the ball because that's what they have with their quarterback, you're going to be in a little bit more of an advantage there. So, they did miss a field goal wide right as well. So, it wasn't very clean. They got the win. They escaped. There's something about South Carolina giving Georgia fits that I've been saying for the past three or four years.
You're going to get it right one day.
I'm going to get it right one day. But was not super impressed. And like they just don't have that dominant electric player on the outside. Like you said, like, they need to feed Brock Bowers. He is their guy. He is their horse. And they just don't get on the ball as much. And part of that is probably because it's Mike Bobo and it's not the guy that just left that's over at the Ravens now. Like, you don't have that creativity. Todd Monken. I mean, you don't have that anymore. And to me, it shows. I mean, the coaching difference shows from offense last year to this year. Last year, they probably would have blown out the South Carolina team and not be close just because of the offensive structure. it might be pretty similar, but the play calling is different. They tried to be super vanilla and just destroy them, and it just didn't work. And so they had to finesse them most of the way down the field.
Yeah, it feels like they don't have the same type of confidence that they had in Stetson Bennett as they, or they don't have the same confidence in Carson Beck as they did with Stetson Bennett last year. I wasn't impressed with Carson Beck this week. That's not to say that he's not going to improve as the season goes on, but when you have a guy like that at Georgia, you have to be able to facilitate and be a really good game manager. And I just didn't feel like he was that this week. And on top of that, he wasn't this explosive, dominant player. I'm not going to sit here and say that they have a quarterback problem, but if Georgia is going to get to where they want to be this year, Carson Beck has to be 10 times better going forward than he was against South Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a Georgia fan, a 10-point win against South Carolina at home when you were 4-touchdown favorites shouldn't feel good. I mean, it just shouldn't. If you feel confident after that one, then I'm going to be like, hey, I mean, I'd feel confident about you winning your division more now after the Florida-Tennessee nonsense that happened. But when it comes to national perspective, when it comes to beating whoever comes out on top in the West, I would be a little less confident. I mean, they've won the championship 2 years in a row. I mean, it's very, very, very difficult to win 3 times in a row because you're dealing with all sorts of stuff. But I mean, so far I don't see it, and I don't understand why the AP and the coaches keep just automatically placing them at one. I don't get it. We'll get to the poll in a little bit. I don't know. That's kind of my thoughts on that. Real quick. Boston College comes up short to Florida State, Mason. I mean, you just got to chalk this up to a look ahead spot for Florida State since they have Clemson coming up, right? Like, is there anything else that we need to worry about that, or what's going on here?
So I will say this about the game. I'm trying to pull it up. I can't find it. I was trying to find the first half score. If I remember correctly, coming out of halftime. Okay, here it is. So they were up 17-10 coming out of halftime, which is what it is. They looked okay in the first half. I think the big thing for me coming out of that game is Jordan Travis getting hurt going into halftime. Obviously, he came back and played in the second half, but their second half offense looked night and day different to what it was in the beginning of the season and even the first half. I don't know what the injury actually was. I think it was something with his shoulder. So they weren't really throwing the ball a ton in the second half. They just looked really shaky, man. And I think going into this week against Clemson, that is something you have to keep your eye on and kind of remember in the back of your head, because if he's hurt and he's not playing 100%, they're not as good as we thought they were, just being honest. Like, he's a great player and he carries them when he's healthy. But if he's a little bit injured, that might be a shot for them against Clemson. That's really more of what I took from the game, because I thought they were fine until he got hurt. But yeah, it was just such a weird game, and Boston College had every chance to win. But when you have 18 penalties at that point, you're kind of shooting yourself at the foot, and you don't really have much of a chance to win.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that definitely was one that I did not really pay attention to. So yeah, that's really good insight. Jordan Travis with a little lingering shoulder. That's no bueno. With Clemson coming up, but we'll get to how we feel on that game here towards the end of the show. So Mason, I think it's time. The game that you probably wanted to immediately turn off as soon as you turned it on. Alabama, for some reason, traveling to South Florida in one of the ugliest games that you could probably ever watch. You're just gonna go off on it? Like, what is happening in Tuscaloosa right now?
I put so much energy into going off on them last week. I don't know if I have it in me.
Can you
again.
Do it 2 weeks in a row?
I don't know. That was just, man, that was disgusting. It was insanely hard to watch, because just from the first snap, I was basically just angry the entire time. Okay, look, Nick, you tried the Tyler Buckner experiment. He crashed and burned, and he was probably the worst quarterback in all of college football. We're good. Put him at fourth string. Let's move on. Ty Simpson came in. I thought he was okay. he's obviously very inexperienced. He made some good plays. Obviously, he helped them win the game. But that clock in the back of his head that you have to have as a quarterback just was not ticking for him. He got sacked a couple times in possessions where he just held the ball for way too long. So he is very inexperienced. Saban's already came out and said that Milroe's going to be the starter this week against Ole Miss. I don't know why we didn't just keep doing that. The rumors coming out were that he had a bad week of practice. He wasn't responding well to the Texas loss and also Buckner and Simpson getting first team snaps. So I don't know if something weird happened in practice where he might have actually been suspended a little bit, but those are all just rumors. I will say, coming out of this game, you got to feel better about the fact that you know what you are now. You know Milroe's your guy. He doesn't have to look over his shoulder anymore. You've seen the other two guys. They were both, one was terrible, one was average. So he's your guy. You started to establish your running game a little bit at the end of the game. I think going forward, you're going to see a lot more Roy Dell Williams than you are Jace McClellan. I just think that he has more pop up the middle, which is, I think is what they're looking for, whereas Jace McClellan tries to bounce it outside a lot. And I just don't think that's going to work for this offensive line because of how slow and slow-footed their tackles are. I mean, the left tackle is a true freshman, and he's getting beat on just bull rushes. I mean, come on. You're a five-star. You're playing at Alabama. You got to at least be able to stop a bull rush. Come on. But he can't do that right now. The offensive line was terrible. Again, it's just the same story as it was last week. If they can't get their act together against South Florida, I don't know how they get it together against Ole Miss. I think it's going to go a little bit better just because we actually are going to have Milroe back. But I just, like, I'm really at a loss for words at this point because it just felt like there was just a complete lack of effort. Like, the reason I was okay coming out of the Texas game is because they had good effort. They played hard. They made mistakes, whatever, but they were at least playing hard the entire game. That was not there against South Florida. I mean, from the jump, you could just tell there was something wrong. But, yeah, I mean, it's just –
one of the things that you brought up in our discussion about Texas last week was what I called excuse making by some of the players after the game, saying, you know, we took winning for granted and all this, yes, that, and the other. So, like, you can't say that.
No.
And then follow up that performance with what you did this past Saturday. Like, if you're going to make a comment like that, like, you better come out and destroy South Florida like everybody was expecting for you to then be a double-digit favorite against Ole Miss this weekend. Like, that's what the Bama standard is since Nick has gotten there. And when you're going to make comments like, you know, we took winning for granted, you can't, like, if you're going to make that comment, like, you obviously, there's obviously more issues than just say, oh, we just took it for granted, you know, like, we just thought we were going to win. We thought it'd be easy. Like, no, like, this is second, maybe even third year, you could say, in a row where you're kind of worried about that mentality of the kids on the team.
Yeah.
And you haven't, I mean, you saw, like, stuff that people are coming out from, like, 2013, 2014 Bama, or since 2007, his first year, of stuff you haven't seen from this program ever, really. Like, the last time you were really embarrassed like this was, like, maybe UL Monroe, but even then, like, you kind of somewhat understand it because it's Saban's first year. You went 6-6 in the regular season anyways. Like, everybody's you're not fine with that you lost Louisiana Monroe, but, like, you're fine with it in a program says, like, oh, he's just building. Yeah. Like, he's just, like, this obviously isn't it. We're on the trajectory up. Like, you're already up there, and you have everybody in America wanting to say that you guys are done and dead and buried and that you're on the decline. You, like, you accelerate that talk by what you just did against South Florida.
100%. No, I completely agree with you. And I just got to say this. It's every year the fair weather Alabama fans really frustrate me. But this year,
I'm calling out the casuals. Let's go.
This year, they're taking it to 100 for some reason. You can tell by just talking to an Alabama fan who was built on Nick Saban, and then you have another Alabama fan who was built on Mike Shula. Okay. And the Saban bots are so frustrating, and I am so tired of them. So please, Fairweather fans, just pick a side. Either be in or be out. Let's not keep doing this, because I guarantee you what's going to happen is if Alabama goes in and they smack Ole Miss next week, the Fairweather fans are going to be all back in. The dynasty never ended. Blah, 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 blah. And it's going to drive me insane. So just letting you know early that there might be a rant on that next week, because I'm tired of them.
Mason is over the bandwagons. Yes. It's taken 20 years.
No, I've always been frustrated with them, but they've got me this year. This is where it ends for me, for the Fairweather fans.
So, like, it's obviously the easy hot take. If you can, like, I don't even know if we can call it a hot take at this point, calling the Bama dynasty dead. Like, it's been a joke kind of for a little bit. Yeah. And then it kind of maybe got a little bit serious and everybody's kind of all on it. Like, what happens if you lose this weekend? You don't want to think about it because you're a big Bama guy. Like, obviously, you don't want to think about worst case scenario. But, like, legitimately, you have a pretty decent Ole Miss team coming in with firepower.
We have like a tough stretch for the next 5 or 6 games.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an easy stretch, man. Yeah. So like, this is the first, like, this last Saturday was supposed to be your hey, get it right week.
Yeah.
To get you tuned up for your stretch, and then now, you know, you're staring down the barrel of the SEC West gauntlet. I'm pulling up the schedule now for you. You got Ole Miss this week at home. You go on the road to a very much struggling Mississippi State, but it's on the road. Anything could happen. It is a night game in Starkville.
Those are the worst.
That's going to be something. You got your back-to-back road game. So you go at State, at A&M. You play Arkansas. You host Tennessee, which did not look great. And then you play LSU, and that's the end of your stretch. So, I mean, it's like the thing with, and the other hot take everybody's taking is, oh, the SEC sucks this year. Like, obviously, it's not as good as past years because the quarterback play in the league is down because everybody left last year. I mean, you had your few returners of Jaden Daniels and, you know, who else? You know, you had Jaden Daniels return. Anybody of note, you had Devin Leary come in. KJ Jefferson's back on a bad Arkansas team. Like, obviously, it's down. It's still the best like conference generally in the country. So what? I mean, the schedule is a little bit more manageable in that aspect for Bama. So it's not the absolute murderer's row that maybe it was last year. Like, if you play at Mississippi State last year with this team, sweating bullets, because that was a really good Mississippi State team. This year, maybe not as much, but it's still State. You still had to respect them. You know, like you said, whenever we talked about the LSU game, they're bound for some really bad games, but they're bound to have one of the incredible games that you don't expect them to have. Maybe they could have that. You have A&M, which has tons of talent. Do they still have Jimbo at that point? I don't know. I mean, that's something we talked about in the offseason, but it's not an easy stretch. And starting with Ole Miss, and Ole Miss has been a thorn, no matter who the coach has been a thorn in Nick Saban's side for the past 10 years or so.
I will say this. I'm a little glad that the next two games are Ole Miss and Mississippi State, because especially with Ole Miss being at home, I do feel like this can be a good, or can be a get right game for Alabama. If their offensive line gets it together and actually comes out and perform how they're supposed to, Alabama's going to be fine. So I do think that if this players only meeting that happened this week can get help get the stuff off their chest and blah, 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 then Alabama's going to be fine. But it's just hard to feel any type of confidence for them right now after the last 2 weeks. I feel like them playing Ole Miss, because Ole Miss is playing well right now, and they are a semi-big name. So if you can go out and put on a good performance against them, then that'll make you feel better about yourself than going to Mississippi State, where you should beat them by a couple touchdowns. And then after that, then you have the big one against Texas A&M. So I don't know, man. I'm a whirlwind of emotions right now.
Next week should be fun, Mason. Do you want me to text you throughout the game?
No, I don't. I just want to be happy again, Cam.
Okay, let's move on to an upset that happened this weekend. Another 11 a.m. kick. Missouri upsetting Kansas State with the 61-yard field goal at the buzzer. The thicker kicker that choked it against Auburn last year comes through and beats Kansas State. Did you get to watch any of that? And what were your thoughts?
I did not get to watch much of it. My first thought was, who would have thought that that Missouri is the SEC team that comes out and saves the conference worse record against Power Five? I never would have guessed that it would have been Missouri, but here we are. Shout out to them.
Shout out Missouri. Mason giving you props. Maybe he's not all the way down to kick you out of the league at this point.
No, they're about third on the list at this point.
So that was something that happened. And let's talk about another upset that happened, Mason. This was the primetime game, really the first primetime game. There were two. The first primetime game of the night, Florida and Tennessee. This is a game that we talked a good bit about, that we had some listener feedback on before we picked it. Tennessee craps the bed. Florida dominates. They win 29-16. You and I both kind of talked about Billy Napier, and even our listener talked about, hey, this is a super important game for him. And you really saw it from the way that they played, the emotion they had. The crowd obviously fed into that. And they just dominated really from start to finish against the Tennessee team that is, to me, surprisingly struggling all in the offensive side of the ball. I think we all thought that maybe there would be a little bit of tune up that they maybe needed to do on the offensive side, since they lost their receivers and lost Hendon Hooker. But I was pretty confident in the guys that they had returning and having good bats to be able to run the ball, and Joe Milton having plenty of experience behind Hendon Hooker, that they would eventually be able to find it, especially against Florida. Whenever I was doing preseason picks, and they just look completely out of sync, Mason. Like, this looks like a completely different team, and they play like this all year. I mean, we're looking at a 8-win team, maybe.
I have to start with this. Please, 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 please tell me you saw the very end of that game.
The fights?
Yes.
Yes.
Josh Heupel, what a clown move by him, calling a timeout with 7 seconds left. That was disgusting on his part, but I'm so glad Florida decided to fight after that, because I probably would have been pissed off too. I couldn't believe he did that. The whole time I was sitting there, I was just in absolute shock. But yeah, you're right, man. I was surprised on how the game went. I picked Tennessee to win that game. I think the surprising thing to me, though, is Florida coming out with Trevor Etienne having 172 rushing yards. I mean, they looked awesome on the ground. The thing that I was criticizing them about earlier in the season against Utah was the coaching mistakes that were happening. But going into this game, man, it just felt like Billy Napier kind of really had a grasp on the team and what was working for them and how to get the best out of every player. So I was impressed by that, by them. Believe it or not, it is important, or it does hurt a college football team when you lose two really great wide receivers and a great quarterback, like you did with Tennessee. Shocker, I know that. But I was not expecting them to look this different on offense, because last year they were throwing the ball like crazy. This year, I feel like they're having to incorporate the run a lot more than they were last year, just basically because they don't necessarily have the confidence in Joe Milton that everybody kind of thought they were going to. honestly, I'm kind of wondering if there's going to be a quarterback change from there for them at some point too, because they do have a five-star sent behind them at this point.
Yeah, I mean, Florida had a really, really good first half offensively. They scored 26 points in the first half. And then the Tennessee defense stepped up and only allowed three the rest of the way. So, I mean, the game was there for Tennessee to go and take after a not great performance in the first half. And they just, the Florida defense was able to get pressure. They were able to stop the run. And Joe Milton just wasn't accurate enough. I will say for Florida, the thing that is going to keep sticking on them is going to be their special teams. Their special teams are so bad. It's really unbelievable how bad they are. I mean, I thought LSU special teams last year was bad, and they don't have anything against the Florida special teams this year. Might as well just go for two every single time. Don't kick field goals. Just go for it on fourth down every time. Like, let's just not even use that part of the game if you're Florida. I mean, it's just, it's rough to watch.
So coming out of this game, do you think this was a bigger win for Florida or a bigger loss for Tennessee?
I think it's equally as good for Florida because they desperately needed this, especially Billy Napier for his tenure at Florida really needing it. But it, I think it's also, man, you're Tennessee. You just came off of a great year. This is supposed to be another stepping stone. And you just had a dud, man. I mean, like, it just, it didn't look great against Virginia. Didn't look great against Austin Peay the week before. And it looks bad again against a Florida team that, like, honestly, like, we aren't high on at all. Like, we're talking about maybe not even making a bowl game. This is one of the games that, as Tennessee, if you're going to be in the upper echelon of the SEC East or just the SEC in general once expansion comes next year, this is the kind of, like, I get it's a rivalry game, but this is the kind of game you have to win at all costs. Like, I'm not saying you have to go and beat Florida, beat their brakes off and beat them by three touchdowns, but you at least have to squeak out a win and say, hey, we can win anywhere. You're continually being haunted by the swamp. You can't win there. And until you can prove otherwise, it's going to be really hard for anybody to start believing that Tennessee is fully back. You had a really good year last year. This was the year that you're supposed to build on that. And they, so far, they can't. And my SEC East preview isn't looking great. It's not looking good so far for my Tennessee hype and Joe Milton hype. There's still plenty of time in the season, but I think I'm a little bit more disappointed as a Tennessee fan than I would be super excited as Florida. Because Florida, I mean, you still have a lot of the same issues. You were finally able to run the ball. That was one thing, great takeaway for Florida, is that they were actually able to run the ball against last year, really good run defense of Tennessee that you were kind of expecting to happen again this year, really good run defense. And Florida, I think, ran for like 10 yards against Utah. So that was obviously a big point of emphasis, and they were actually able to do it. And again, Trevor Etienne went off, had a career day, and you had to have it to win. So, but even still, like, I would be probably more concerned as a Tennessee fan than I would be excited a Florida fan at this point.
Yeah, so that's kind of where I took it too, because I feel like when you have these great teams, right, like 2019 LSU, they had to get their monkey off their back and go into Tuscaloosa and beat Alabama, and they did it, and they topped it off and had a great season. Same thing with Georgia. They were really struggling to beat Alabama, and then they finally beat Alabama, and then they start going on a great run. For Tennessee, that monkey has been the swamp. Like, they haven't won there since 2003. So if you're going to have the type of season that you want to have and that everybody was predicting that you're going to have, and you want to turn this program around and start actually competing every single year in and year out, you have to go in and win this game. Like, this has to be something that you go in, you dogfight it out, and you come out with the win. And I just didn't see that out of Tennessee. But yeah, again, like you said too, like this was a great win for Florida. Like Billy Napier desperately needed that win. So yeah, I completely agree with you that it was just about even for both of them.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't want people to hear me say, oh, it's not a big deal for Florida. No, it is a huge deal because that's a huge step that you needed, again, just to make it bowl eligible, man. Like that's what you are fighting for and desperate for if you're a Florida fan for this team is, hey, let's just make it to a bowl game. Like that's what we really want. And so looking at the rest of the schedule for Florida, you're 2-1. You play Charlotte this week. You'll be 3-1. And then you got a stretch of pretty winnable games. Your next three going on the road to Lexington, who you've struggled with the past few years. You play Vandy at home. And then you go on the road to South Carolina. If you can win those three games, or then I would feel real, like, obviously you win those three games, you're one win a game. No, you're not. If you win four of those games, you're bowl eligible. You win your next four, you're bowl eligible. If you don't, you have a hard time after that, because after that, you have Georgia, Arkansas, which Arkansas would be the one that you would need if you lose one of the next four. So you go Georgia, Arkansas, you go to LSU, to Missouri, and then finish with Florida State. So if you're going to get there at Florida to make a bowl and to have a good season, and for this team, that would be a good season, you got to win your four in a row here coming up. You got to have a big W in the next four game stretch. You'll obviously beat Charlotte this week. If you don't, then you don't deserve a bowl game. But after that, I mean, obviously you get Vandy at home. That should be an easy W for you. But the two hard ones for you is going to be Kentucky on the road and South Carolina on the road. Those have two quarterbacks that are not great, but solid, Devin Leary and Spencer Rattler. And they're going to be playing at home. It's going to be a tough time, but you got to win those games if we're going to make it to a bowl game. Winning this one is huge for you because now you have a realistic feel and a realistic shot now that, hey, we can actually get there. Here's the path. There's a path to maybe beating Arkansas or maybe upsetting Missouri on the road. If you drop one of these next four, but you got to at least win three of them.
Yeah, it boosts their confidence in the players and the staff. And honestly, in college football nowadays, you need that type of confidence to believe in yourself that week in and week out, you can go in and beat anybody who you're lined up against. And I, you know, I wasn't necessarily feeling that last year. I didn't feel that against Utah either. But coming out of this game, man, you got to imagine that they have all the confidence in the world in Graham Mertz, who I thought played well also. And Billy Napier, he's going to have the guys locked in, I think. And so I really do think that this was a great win for Florida.
And then we're going to go to the real primetime game of the night. Your boys, the Colorado Buffaloes, Deion Sanders, and the rivalry game. Dude, I love the nastiness and the fighting and the late hits. I was eating it up all night on that game. I did fall asleep and missed overtime because it was so freaking late, but that was just a great time. I thoroughly enjoyed the Colorado State game. This was obviously a game that after the comments that were made by Jay Norvell that everybody was convinced, oh, Deion's gonna beat him by 50. Obviously that didn't happen. It went to overtime. What do you think, man? Great game, but does this change anything on the feeling of Colorado, or are we still all the way up on this?
No. I'll get to that in a second. If I would have told you coming into the season that Colorado would have had the two highest watched, most viewed games so far in the college football season, you wouldn't have believed me. And especially if I said Colorado versus Colorado State was one of those two games, You might have lit me on fire at that point.
I'd be like, we're not doing this podcast anymore. Yeah. I need to find a new co-host. Yeah.
But no, man, this is what I was talking about all the time with Deion. Like, he can build the hype around a program, and you've seen that. The amount of people who were at that game. I mean, you have freaking Lil Wayne singing you out of the tunnel at that point. Like, it's hit an incredible spot where I couldn't even imagine this much hype around this team. I will say, though, time to burst the bubble. Losing Travis Hunter for these next two games really puts a damper on my mood for them. I still love them. I still think they're a great team. I still think they're going to be really good for the rest of the season. But you're losing your best, most impactful player against the two best teams on your schedule. So, yikes. Yeah, that one hurt me too.
Yeah, man. Like I said, dude, I ate it up.
It was so much fun.
it was such a fun watch, man. And like, this is the thing that makes college football great.
Yeah.
The rivalries that you don't think about that actually mean something to these guys. And like, obviously, like, these players aren't guys that grew up in Colorado and grew up watching Colorado State. But like, this is an in-state rivalry that two coaches who played against each other in the league were wanting to go up against each other, made comments. The players were fully invested and ready to go. Colorado State had had a week to buy. Like, who does that? Yeah. And had 2 weeks to prepare for this game, and they were ready to go. I think their coach lost them the game by not going for it and fourth down their last offensive possession in regulation. Like, go win the game. Don't give Shedeur Sanders a chance to take it all the way down the field, because he was going to. I thought that was a fatal mistake, but like, it was so fun to watch, and it was so fun to watch Colorado be able to respond. Cause like, obviously there are so many times in this sport where there's the media darling team. The first couple of weeks, they finally faced adversity and they fold. You see that all the time, every single year. And so I was really interested to see, okay, how is this Colorado team going to respond? How is Deion's guys going to respond after getting literally punched in the mouth for the first quarter, first half? I mean, you had a late hit, and guys, let's stop with the death threats on this kid. Okay. Yeah, yes, it was on a late hit. Dude, it was a dirty, hard. It was like, listen, it was a dirty play, but still, come on guys. Like, he obviously didn't mean to like severely hurt Travis.
Yeah.
I mean, he definitely wanted to send a message, but come on guys. Like, let's be better than that. But like, they got it. Colorado had it taken to them for most of the game.
Yeah.
And they found a way to win. So that's super impressive. But I'm like you, man, like Travis Hunter being out for the, like, I obviously don't expect them to beat Oregon this week. I already called my shot and said that they would beat USC. Not having Travis Hunter completely changes that, because now you had the whole field open as an offense for USC now without Travis Hunter. So that really does suck. And very unfortunate if that's the case, but still, Deion's boys riding. All right. It was great. Yeah. Okay. It was a great time.
So the funniest thing to me in that game, I know you said you missed overtime. So in college football overtime, both teams
hate
the ball. But they both get the ball, right? So when you win the coin toss, you defer. You give the other team the ball first. So that way, if they kick a field goal on their first possession, you know you have to score a touchdown. If they don't score, you know you can just go kick a field goal. Deion, for some reason, decided to, after he won the coin toss, to take the ball first. So I am completely convinced that Deion just didn't know the rules of college football overtime. He thought for some reason it was the NFL. But I just thought that was hilarious, because it's like, what are you doing, man? Come on. You obviously defer at that point, but for some reason he decided not to.
They have ruined the college overtime with the stupid rules. The stupid 2-point stuff. Here's what we need to do, Mason. Here's how we fix overtime in college football. And I like the college football rules typically more than I do the pro rules, okay? You can make your argument either way. I don't care. Here's what we need to do for college football overtime. Instead of starting with the ball at the 25-yard line, you start the ball at the 40. And then you just play regular. You don't do any of this. Okay, and then you go back to the old rule of after the third overtime, you score a touchdown, you have to go for two. None of this two-point play, back and forth, garbage nonsense that they added after the LSU-Texas A&M game. None of that crap. You move the ball back to the 40. Teams aren't immediately in field goal range as soon as they get the ball. So people actually have to move the ball. And you know what? You move it back that far, you're probably shortening most overtimes anyways. So like, yeah. Like, let's just do that to where teams actually have to move the ball, get a first down to be in field goal range. So that way it's not just a field goal battle potentially the whole way. That's the way to fix it. But yeah, Deion, hey, this isn't the NFL, bro.
All right. Defer, buddy. Come on.
Defer. You go on defense. You go on defense in overtime.
You don't win if you score the first touchdown, Deion. Come on.
All right. Anything else you want to bring up from week three before we move on?
One thing I'll say quickly, I don't know how much of this game you got to watch. The Penn State-Iowa game. So Penn State ended up winning 30-14 or something like that. That score was actually very deceiving. I thought Penn State looked rough in the first half. Penn State is going to struggle against teams that are going to be able to stop the run. I don't think they're very dynamic on the outside with their wide receivers. And their quarterback, he has a lot of potential, and he's shown some good things so far this season. But I think when teams are going to be able to stack the box against them, they might actually be able to struggle. They might actually struggle a little bit. I thought they were going to be a surprising team and actually possibly upset one of Michigan or Ohio State. After what I saw this weekend, I don't know if that's actually going to end up happening for them.
Yeah, they did struggle against Illinois. They did get five takeaways. You get five takeaways, I'd expect you to win a little bit bigger than 30-13. They have Iowa this week, so we'll get into that.
Gosh.
In our picks. Your favorite team, Iowa, the Iowa Hawkeyes. All right. So let's go ahead and move on to this week, Mason. We have our week four poll of Down the Wire here. And there's been some shakeup, obviously, but not at the top. We still have Georgia at one, Michigan at two, Florida State three, and Texas four. I will say the top three are all separated by 1 point. Georgia at 119, Michigan at 118, and Florida State at 117. So they're all bunched up there. Georgia with the most first place votes, obviously, and they're at the one spot. At the number five spot, we have USC. And then separated by a point at number six is Ohio State. Then we have Washington, which everybody is in love with Washington now after they demolished Michigan State. Next, we got Penn State. Then Notre Dame, who is tied at ninth place with Oregon. At the 11th spot, we have the LSU Tigers. Then at 12, we have Utah, and Alabama falls out of the top 10 in ours, as well as the AP poll for the first time since 2014 to number 13. It's rough, Mason, 13. Oregon State at 14. Then we got Ole Miss at 15. So we have a 13-15 matchup here in Tuscaloosa this weekend. Oklahoma at 16. The Colorado Buffs and Deion at 17. Duke at 18. North Carolina at 19. And Tennessee with a free fall all the way down to 20 here in the poll. I think they were top 10 last week. So all the way down to 20. Miami moves up to 21. Then we got UCLA at 22. Washington State at 23. The Iowa Hawkeyes are at 24, Mason. They're in the poll. And then to round out the top 25, we have Clemson. So we had three other teams receiving a vote. That would be the Florida Gators, the Kentucky Wildcats, and the Missouri Tigers all getting a vote each, but they are not in the top 25. So what do you think, Mason? What do you like? What do you dislike?
I am trying to will Iowa out of this top 25, and it's just not working, unfortunately, but I will keep trying. So you didn't send me your poll, so I'm assuming you didn't have Georgia number one, right?
I did not have Georgia one, no.
Okay, me either. So I had Georgia down at four. So them still floating at number one in our poll. think it's kind of funny at this point. I have Washington higher, so I am actually starting to believe the Washington hype. Michael Penix is going crazy right now. Another one I'm actually kind of rising on right now is Notre Dame. I think they've looked really, really good so far this season. Their running game is awesome. Sam Hartman's balling out. I have them at 9 in my poll, which is squared up with ours. Oh, no, excuse me. They're at 9. Yes. What else am I thinking? Pac-12 is still having a huge number in our poll, which...
Yeah, so you had a swap at the top. So you and I both actually have Georgia at 4 in our polls. And so they're getting propped up by the AP, the coaches, and a fan poll that came in at 1. Both you and I have them at 4. You had a swap at the top for you, though, this week. You had Florida State at 1 last week. This week you have Texas. Is it strictly because of the Boston College game? I kept with my top four of Florida State, Texas 1-2, and then I swapped Michigan and Georgia this week. But, go ahead and give me your thoughts on the difference between Texas and Florida State for you this week.
So for me right now, the top four, they've basically been the same for the last like two weeks since Texas won. But before that, Florida State, Michigan, and Georgia were all in my top four. I think the way I'm looking at it right now is, yes, Florida State struggled against Boston College, so I did have to knock them a little bit for that. But honestly, like, I think if Texas and Florida State played right now neutral field, I think Texas beats them by probably a touchdown. Michigan's the one that I'm keeping my eye on right now. I mean, they've been killing teams basically because they're playing nobodies. So I think, again, this week they're playing a nobody. And so I'm keeping my eye on them to see what happens when they actually play somebody that has a little bit of juice. I mean, if they can play any type of competition, that's one team I'm keeping my eye on. Because if they do look good against a halfway decent team, I can see me bumping them up to 2 or 1 or 2 at this point. But yeah, Georgia's kind of secured in the number 4 spot right now. I don't see myself bumping them over the other 3.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. And you and I are both in agreement at Washington at 5. We're both pretty high on Washington. And then after that, that's kind of when we get a little different. I actually really like Penn State still. So I actually have them at 6 as opposed to at 10 for you. So we have a little bit of a difference there. So we have some differences there, but again, we're right in lockstep 1 through 5. I mean, you can do a coin flip between Florida State and Texas really at this point. And I wouldn't, like, I'm not going to be opposed either way. But I'm going to keep Florida State at the 1 spot, but so that's the poll. We'll go ahead and push that on social media this week. I know we forgot, or I forgot, to post it out last week, so we'll make sure that it's posted out this week. And again, if you want to be involved in the show, this is the thing that we want from you. Be a part of the poll. Send us or email us your top 25 on Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday before we record, and we will get you included on that. You can either reply to any of our social media posts on Instagram, on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, on Facebook. You can reply to any of those. You can DM us on any of those platforms, on our various things, and all the links to those should be linked below on Spotify. Or you can send us an email, downtothewirecm@gmail.com, and we'll get those included in there. So you can be a part of the poll. That is the fan poll. Screw the AP, screw the coaches. The coaches' poll is the dumbest thing because the coaches don't actually make the poll. It's some random aide that just sticks everything the same until somebody loses. Be a part of it. So go ahead and do that. So with that, let's go ahead and move on to fantasy, Mason. What happened this past week? What happened in fantasy this past week, Mason?
You finally got a win on me this year. This is weirdly playing out exactly how it played last year. Last year, I got up 2 games on you in the first 2 weeks. You got the next 2 weeks after that. So we're already on step 3 of the process of this. So I'm going to try and end that this week. You ended up beating me 95-79. Solid win for you. Unfortunately for me, I've had three straight weeks of a zero in my lineup, which is killing me. Okay, it's driving me insane. So I'm trying to break that streak next week or this week. But I do have to say, I got to give us a pat on the back or a pat on the back. Your tight end had 24 points this week. My tight end had 17 points this week.
Yeah. So
look at us taking a shot on the tight end and it paying off. First time that's happened for both of us, I think.
The highest scoring tight end week for us ever.
Yeah. So I think right now going into this week, we are both eyeing the same quarterback for week 5. So I think it's going to be kind of important for us to get a win this week so we can be the one to pick our lineup first. So with that being said, I am going with Dillon Gabriel out of Oklahoma as my quarterback this week. I think he has been putting up really good numbers this week. I think it continues. At running back, I'm going with Bucky Irvin from Oregon. I want some points out of that Oregon-Colorado game, and I think the running back spot for Oregon is the best place to do that. Wide receiver, I'm going with Emeka Ebuka from Ohio State. Yes, he's the number 2 wide receiver at Ohio State, but he is still a great wide receiver. So there's that. My tight end, I'm going with Jatavion Sanders. Not a dart throw because he is very good. So I feel good about that one. And my flex position, I'm going with running back Ray Davis out of Kentucky. I think they're going to ground and pound again this week. And so I'm feeling pretty good about my lineup.
So which one of those is going to put up a zero spot this week, Mason?
Cam, none of them, I hope. But if it's going to be anybody.
If that happens again, Mason, that's just going to be the new segment in the middle of the segment of, okay, which one of Mason's players is going to put up a zero spot? That's going to be the new thing.
Like you with getting quarterbacks hurt last year? Yeah.
Yes. I don't love it. So I'm going all in on my lineup this week, Mason, because I need to be able to make the standings basically null. We're going to restart after this week after a big W. So I went all in on my players, okay? I'm going Bo Nix, all right? He needs to have a better game this year for me than he did last year when I mistakenly picked him against Georgia last year like an idiot, okay? So Bo Nix is going to go off against Colorado. At running back, I'm going to go with Blake Corum at Michigan. They're playing freaking Rutgers, okay? One of the awful team, many awful teams that's in the Big Ten. Yes, I said it. There are many awful teams in the Big Ten, okay? Let's get out of here. Wide receiver, I'm going with Xavier Leggett from South Carolina. Solid guy there. At tight end, I'm not doing a no-name that I have in the past. I'm going Jaheim Bell from Florida State. They're playing Clemson. He's going to have a big role, and he's going to ball out for me. Again, and then flex again, no nonsense this week. I'm going all in. Evan Stewart from Texas A&M is my flex against Auburn. So just get ready, Mason, because I'm going to have first pick next week and get Caleb Williams. So it's fine.
This is going to be a fun week. I honestly think this is the best lineup top to bottom that we've both put out. So it's going to be, I expect a lot of points out of us this week.
Yeah, we've both been trying to save the bullets for the first 3 weeks. And then now that we're here,
it's all out.
Let's go. Yeah. All right, so that's fantasy this week. Again, Mason, why don't you go through your roster one more time for the people?
So quarterback, I have Dillon Gabriel out of Oklahoma. Running back, Bucky Irvin from Oregon. Wide receiver, Emeka Ebuka from Ohio State. Tight end, I have Jatavion Sanders from Texas. And my flex position, I have running back Ray Davis from Kentucky.
And real quickly, again, I have Bo Nix at quarterback from Oregon, Blake Corum at running back from Michigan, Xavier Leggett from South Carolina at wide receiver. At tight end, I'm going Jaheim Bell from Florida State. And then flex, I'm going Evan Stewart, wide receiver at Texas A&M. So that's fantasy this week. Let's go ahead and go on to picks, Mason. You were one game better than me. You won the picks this past week. You went 7-3, very respectable. I went 6-4. I still have the 2-game lead for the year so far, winning 19-11, and you're at 17-13. So we're even. We're making money if we're betting money so far. So we're doing okay. All right, let's keep it up as we're picking against the spread in these games. Again, it's more fun when you pick against the spread. Straight ups are too easy. Pick against the spread if you can. And if you're actually making money, you'll probably make more money doing that anyway. So we'll go and start. Again, we have two really good early games, Mason. Florida State at Clemson. This is the hurdle that Florida State has to have. If they're the team that we think that they are, they're going on the road to Clemson as 2-point favorites. If we rewind this and we're picking this game after week one, I think both you and I would be like, oh yeah, Florida State's winning by double digits.
Yes, 100%.
After the immediate reaction of Florida State dismantling LSU and then Duke beating Clemson. We've had a couple of weeks to simmer. Florida State had the look-ahead spot and did not look great against Boston College. And then, of course, you really haven't heard about Clemson because they haven't played anybody. So Florida State, 2.5-point favorite on the road in Death Valley. We have questions on how really healthy is Jordan Travis. How healthy is Johnny Wilson? Where are we at on this? What do you think?
I really, really, really think that we're going to see a different Clemson team this week than we saw week one. So I am going to ride with Clemson. I think they still have their tail tucked from getting beat by Duke in the first game of the season. I think they got to come out. They got to find a big win for the rest of the season and get themselves back in contention for the ACC championship. And I think they pop off and they do it this week against Florida State. Also, like you said, don't really know what the health of Jordan Travis is actually going to be this week. He did come back and play in the game, but it wasn't the same. So I'm going to go with Clemson.
You're going to stick to your guns from the preseason and go Clemson. I know of somebody that's going to immediately text you when you're wrong on this. I'm going Florida State. I have been riding high on them, especially in the ACC since the offseason. And this is the game that they are waiting on. I mean, obviously they had a big game against LSU, but this is the one. This is the hurdle. We talked about monkey on the back for Tennessee. This has been the monkey on the back for Florida State for the past 10 years since Jameis Winston left. They have not been able to really compete against Clemson. Obviously, it is going to be hard being in a road environment, but they have the players, they have the seniority, they have the talent to go in and beat a not great Clemson team. And I think they're going to, and I wouldn't be surprised if they won by 2 touchdowns. That's how confident I am that Florida State's going to go into the fake Death Valley and beat Clemson. All right. So let's go.
2 touchdowns. Okay. Sheesh.
Easy 2.5 cover, dude. Easy 2-point cover.
You can't handle the smoke from people texting you about you being wrong. It's okay. I understand. It's all right.
What are you talking about? Let's go ahead and move on, Mason. Auburn at A&M is the sneaky game here at 11 a.m. going up against Florida State and Clemson. This one's really interesting. This is a game we kind of had circle whenever we were going through the SEC West and even having our big conversation on, does Jimbo make it through the whole year as the coach at A&M? This is a big game for both programs. Obviously, A&M needs this to not be embarrassed and not have Jimbo be on the ultimate hot seat. And Auburn needs this as a confidence builder as they're trying to rebuild their roster and rebuild their program with Hugh Freeze in his first year. And I think they're kind of in similar spots, but in different ways, if that makes any sense. So Auburn on the road. A&M is a 7.5-point favorite in this one, Mason. What do you think on that?
Cam, I'm going to be really honest with you right now. I have gone back and forth on this game probably 5 times in the last 5 minutes, and I still don't really know where I land on it. I think I want to lean Auburn, but I can't tell if I'm wanting to lean Auburn just because of my hatred of Jimbo. But then again, the game is at Kyle Field in Texas A&M. But
you know what? Here's the thing. You're going Auburn. Okay, it's a respectable pick, and I can completely understand it. And here's what I'll say, and here's kind of the hard thing that I'm at when it comes to picking Auburn, because like I feel like this is a game that everybody wants to pick Auburn.
Yeah.
To at least cover the 7.5, right?
Yeah.
And would be a trendy pick to win. The problem is Auburn really struggled against Cal.
Yeah.
Supremely. Yeah. And you can maybe chalk that up to, hey, they traveled all the way across the country. They just got out with the win. Like, I can get that. The other thing is they're going to be a running team this year. They don't really have weapons on the outside on offense. And so with that, A&M was able to stop the Miami rushing attack. Now, they couldn't, you know, defend the pass to save their life. But I don't know if Auburn has the capabilities to take advantage of that. That's going to be my worry. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. I think Auburn's defense is still pretty talented and pretty good, and they'll be able to hold Texas A&M, relatively speaking, down. I want to pick Auburn, too. It's hard. I don't know how to pick this one either. I'm going to go with you, Mason. I don't know if Auburn wins, but I think they'll keep it within the 7.5. This is one of those, the series history on this one has been close. Last year, Cadillac Williams with the coach for Auburn and beat A&M. It's always kind of been close games between these two. So I think it's going to be closer than the 7.5. So I'm going to go Auburn to cover. I don't know how much I believe in them doing a straight out win. If they if they get the win, oh boy, we're going to have some fun talking about Jimbo next week, aren't we?
And look, I've always been wrong at picking the Texas A&M games. For some reason, I've never gotten that right. So when I feel good and want to pick Texas A&M, they always come out and lay a dud like they did against Miami. So hopefully I actually get this one right.
Hey, for like the benefit of both of us, pick A&M to win by 100. That way they lose. Okay, you gotta take an L for the show, Mason. Come on.
We've been waiting for this one, for this game particularly, for a very, very long time. This could be a big one for us.
All right, let's move on. A lot of really good games in the Pac-12 this week, Mason. We're gonna start off Colorado. Your boys Deion going on the road to Oregon. This is where a lot of people are probably expecting reality to really hit Colorado. Oregon's a 21-point favorite, though. That's a lot of points against a pretty decent Colorado team. Of course, still no Travis Hunter. Where do you like this one?
So if you would have told me that Travis Hunter was playing, I would have thought that Colorado would have had a lot better chance to actually beat Oregon. I don't necessarily think that they're going to win the game, but I do think they'll cover. 21 is a very big number for a team like Colorado who has a great offense. So I am going to go with Colorado in this game.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go to Colorado too. There's two ways that I think this game goes. I don't think either way that Colorado wins, but it's either going to be Oregon just flat out completely dominates them from jump to finish, or Colorado keeps it close. I don't think I don't see a game where it's, you know, Colorado kind of keeps it close, but Oregon kind of coasts to the end. I think it's they get up big in the first quarter and never look back, or Colorado is going to be a pain. Like you said, 21 points is such a big margin. And with a really good Colorado team, I get no Travis Hunter, but they still have really good studs on offense that they can get the ball to. Oregon is pretty good on defense, but 21 is just too much for me. I got to go Colorado on that too, but I expect Oregon to win. I do expect Oregon to win.
Yeah, for sure. I completely agree.
All right, next one. And this one's going to be interesting, Mason. UCLA at Utah. And I'm hearing Cam Rising is finally back for the Utes. Now, how fully back he is, how the knees do, we won't know until game time, but you got to feel a bit better if you're a Utes fan. Utah is a 4.5-point favorite at home against the Fighting Chip Kellys. What do you think about this one?
Yeah, I heard that too about Cam Rising. That's really exciting. So I'll say this about UCLA. They have a very, very dynamic and exciting young freshman quarterback, Dante Moore. He's very good right now, but he is still very raw. I think Chip Kelly is going to be able to do some good things with him, but I just can't pick against Utah with Cam Rising coming back. I do think that they will win this game. And if he's healthy and plays well, or if he is healthy and is closer to 100%, I think they dominate the game. So I'm going Utah.
Yeah, it's a tough ask to have a true freshman quarterback go on the road to Utah. That's for sure. Such a hard ask. The good thing for them is that it's not a night game, but even still, that place is going to be rocking. It's hard to win. I like Utah in this spot. I especially like Utah since they have Cam Rising back. Now, is he all the way back? I don't know, but they also have Brent Keithy coming back. They're tight end too. So you get both of those guys back, your offense is instantly going to improve. So I like Utah to cover the 4.5 as well. So we're going Utah Utes. And here we go, Mason. Ole Miss, the Rebels, the Fighting Lane Kiffins, the Lane Train, going to Tuscaloosa to fight a struggling Alabama Crimson Tide. Bama is a 7-point favorite at home. After the rough week against South Florida, Mason, how are we feeling? What do you think?
Oh, Cam, I can't tell if it's just my homerism that is wanting me to say that we get it on track, but I want to have a little bit of faith in this team right now. So I think that Alabama's going to come out. They're going to play well. I think Jalen Milroe is going to put up some nice numbers. Everybody's going to be feeling good again. I'm going Bama by 100.
Going Bama by 100. It's a bold move, sir. It's a bold move. Here's a stat that I want you to listen to, Mason.
I don't know if I want to.
Give this to you. I think I saw that Bama is dead last in pressures given up.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
In the country. Guess how many sacks that Ole Miss has on defense so far this year? In three games.
I'm going to go with 9.
They have 10 sacks in three games. Nice. You're close. 10 sacks in three games, and that is going up against the worst pass-blocking team in the country statistically. That's rough, Mason. That's rough. I don't know who's going to win the game, but I think it's going to be closer than a touchdown. So I'm going to go Ole Miss covering. I have no idea who's going to win, though. I think this is going to be pretty entertaining. The thing that Bama cannot have happen, it's worst case scenario if Ole Miss gets up 10 or 14 early. 100%. They get up that much early, pack your bags, leave the stadium, it's over.
Oh, 100%.
This Bama team isn't built to come from behind. So if you're an Alabama fan, you got to hope that you just ground it out. Lane and Ole Miss are going to get their points, but don't let them get big explosives right after the other. You can't go 3-and-out, give up touchdown, 3-and-out, give up touchdown. You do that, you're digging your own grave. I'm going to go Ole Miss to cover, but I have no idea who wins. So,
yeah, that can we move on?
we'll move on just for you, Mason. Okay, we'll go on to the Arkansas LSU game. LSU's a 17.5-point favorite against the Razorbacks. Razorbacks lost to our team from last year, BYU, last week at home at that. What do you think? Does LSU cover the 17.5?
This is not my 11-2 Arkansas Razorbacks, Cam. I don't recognize this team. I don't know who they are. Give me LSU. I think they put on another good performance. I mean, come on. Arkansas just lost to BYU. I mean, dude, I don't think they even have a chance anymore against LSU.
I mean, I think LSU wins. It's just, to me, again, it's 17.5 is a lot of points. I'm kind of at the same place that I am with Oregon in the 21. Raheem Sanders, Rocket Sanders, don't know if he's playing or not. If he doesn't play, I think it's easy. LSU covers. What the heck? Why not? LSU by 100. Let's go.
Yeah, Cam, you're starting to worry me a little bit. You had me sold that you were about to pick Arkansas. I was really going to question your fandom there for a minute.
Listen, I got to keep you on your toes here, okay?
No, you did a good job. Props to you. Props to you.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, let's go to the next Pac-12 battle. Oregon State Beavers with DJ going on the road to Washington State. Oregon State is a 3-point road favorite. This is an interesting one, Mason. What do you think?
Yeah, so DJ has been playing very, very well for Oregon State. I will say this about Washington State. Cam Ward has been playing very well for them. He's kind of a forgotten name in the quarterback realm in the Pac-12, but he is sneaky good. He's a very good player. But I just have a lot of confidence in this Oregon State team right now. I think they've been playing well, but this is going to be a close game in my opinion, but I do still think that Oregon State wins and covers.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I can definitely see that. I think this is one of the games that this is another game that I'm really not sure. Again, we have tons of great games that could go either way, and this is another one of those games. And I could see Oregon State winning. I could see Washington State winning. I'm actually going to go with the home dogs, Washington State Cougars. I'm going to go with them with Cam Ward. DJ struggled a little bit last week, so I'm going to go Washington State.
Well, I don't mind for that one. I mean, they're a fun team. So.
Let's go Cougars. All right. This is probably the game of the week. The game that a lot of people have been looking forward to since the beginning of the season. Ohio State, the hype with Ohio State and their defense. Will Kyle McCord finally get it together for the offense to be rolling? They are going into South Bend to play Notre Dame, Sam Hartman, and the boys. Ohio State is a 3-point road favorite, Mason. What do we think on the Buckeyes and the Fighting Irish?
I am going to chalk this game up to a quarterback battle. I have a lot more confidence in Sam Hartman than I do Kyle McCord. So I think Notre Dame is going to win and cover the game. I think you're going to see a very balanced attack out of Notre Dame. They've been running the ball a lot so far this year because Audric Esme has been balling out. But I think they're going to be very balanced, and I think they're going to keep Ohio State on their toes. I am weirdly expecting a very high-scoring game. I think Marvin Harrison and Emeka Abuka are going to have great games on the other side as well. But I think at the end of the game, it's just going to come down to who has more experience at quarterback. That falls for Notre Dame with Sam Hartman, so I am going with Notre Dame.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, man. There's a ton of hype about this Ohio State team, especially the Ohio State defense, and I don't know if they've really lived up to the hype so far, especially Kyle McCord and the offense. You have two first-round wide receivers on the outside. It's really hard to pick against that, but Sam Hartman is the difference maker in South Bend. I mean, that's the thing that they have been waiting on, and the thing that's been missing is a quarterback that can get everybody the ball and play well, not just being a game manager. I like Notre Dame in this one, especially since they're at home, and I think they beat Ohio State, which I think is a little bit overrated still to this point in the season. So Notre Dame, Fighting Irish. What are we going to think about Notre Dame, especially since after they win this game against Ohio State, Mason, the media is just going to go all over them? I mean, are we really ready for that? I don't know if we are.
I'm going to be honest. I'm a little worried where my mind's going to go if they do win this game, because they have been rising in my heart, unfortunately.
Mason, don't you dare. Unfortunately. Don't you dare.
I blame Sam Hartman, okay? I really liked him last year. He won me over last year, and then he decided to transfer to Notre Dame, which is like, it's just such a heart tug for me. Like, I hate Notre Dame, but I love Sam Hartman. So if they win this game, I don't know what's going to happen to me. I'm not mentally prepared for it yet.
Oh, Mason. All right, let's move on to the next one. It's your favorite team in college football, Mason, the Iowa Hawkeyes, going on the road to Penn State. This is a line that I don't know I expected. 14.5 favorite is Penn State against Iowa. I already know you're about to pick Penn State, but I'll ask you anyways, who are you picking?
I am picking Penn State because I do not believe Ohio or Iowa will score 14 points. So give me Penn State.
Hey, they scored 41 points last week, Mason. Come on.
Are we sure they actually scored 41 points? Okay. Did anybody actually watch that game? Are we sure they didn't just lie about it in their box score? Because I'm not convinced, okay? I don't think that's possible that they can score 41 points.
Oh, you're such a hater.
Yes.
You're such a hater.
I am a hater.
I'm going Iowa, man. 14 and a half is too much with that Iowa defense. They're going to be able to stop the run. I don't know if they'll be able to fully stop the run against Penn State, but they'll be able to slow it down. Like you said, you slow down the run from Penn State, you're going to run into issues. I think Penn State probably wins, but I don't think they win by 14 and a half. I just don't see it. Iowa Hawkeyes, and then they're going to move up in the rankings even after they lose, Mason, just for you. Do I dare rank them number one just for you?
I could see you doing that just out of spite, just ranking them number one.
All right, and the last game that we have on the slate is the Mississippi State Bulldogs at South Carolina Gamecocks. Both teams coming off of losses in SEC play last week. South Carolina is a 6.5-point home favorite against Mississippi State. What do you think on this one?
I'm actually really looking forward to this game based on the fact that I really feel like this can be a pick-me-up game for Mississippi State. South Carolina just came off of what I would say was a winnable game for them, where they lost it in the second half. So I don't know how that's going to end up affecting them. When you look at it, when you have a chance to beat Georgia like that and you drop the ball and you don't, normally that tends to affect teams the next week after that. And I think if you're Mississippi State after getting blown out by LSU, you can basically play free at that point, because what do you have to lose anymore? I think they come out, they put on a good performance, they end up shutting Spencer Rattler down. So I'm going with Mississippi State.
Mississippi State's an interesting pick. I mean, this is going to be a matchup, especially when Mississippi State's on offense and South Carolina's on defense. It's a battle of weaknesses, right? I mean,
yeah.
You have a weakness in the Mississippi State offensive line against the weakness that is the South Carolina run defense. So it'll be really interesting to see how that goes. I think that really, and the style of play that Zach Arnett wants his team to play on offense, it really kind of goes into their hand. South Carolina is still my boys, though. All right. South Carolina and Spencer Rattler. I'm going with the boys at home covering the 6.5 against State, because I don't think State's very good this year.
Yeah. Well, I kind of saw that coming, since you're obsessed with South Carolina.
Let's go, bro. Go Gamecocks.
What,
all right.
Okay. What do you think is worse, my hatred of Iowa or your love of South Carolina? Because, I mean, honestly, I think they kind of contradict each other.
You just, like, I don't know. you can't give Iowa at least say that I was wrong. And I said so on the podcast earlier. Rewind the tape, Mason. I said, you know what? South Carolina isn't as good as I thought they would be this year. Okay? You, on the other hand, with your hate of Iowa, will refuse to put them in your top 25, no matter how good they actually are. Okay?
Okay, look,
get out of here.
I said last week, I will accept my being wrong about Iowa if they score more than 24 points a game this season or fire their offensive coordinator, then we're good.
Well, they've already done that once. They scored 41, Mason.
The whole season, you got to average 24. And then going into next year, I'll be better.
Okay. Well, All right.
It's a tall task for them.
All right, guys, thank you so much again for listening. We are looking forward to a action-packed week 4 of college football this week. So until we are back again next Tuesday night, we will catch you on the next one. See you.